chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you say it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Rest make to heaven in the middle of it. Rest make to heaven in the middle. We are. Rest make to heaven.
Secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. We're going to start off this Saturday night program with Alex testifying to a final lockdown. He's saying that he's got two federal sources, to say that there's going to be a lockdown again, starting in September through the end of the year. So here we go with Alex announcing a possible lockdown occurring beginning in September.
We are not helpless worms. We are not legless, spineless jellyfish. We do not have to sit here and take the same criminal UN, global, WEF, New World Order regimes second rollout of lockdowns and attempts at forced injections and travel restrictions and being told you're non-essential. We don't have to lay down and die. And for the third world, but they'll lock them down again under IMF World Bank control. It is a literal death sentence. They estimate over 80 million people starved to death the last 3.5 years because of the COVID restrictions. Ladies and gentlemen, I got a call yesterday. An individual was in town, and they wanted to meet with me that I know well, and they are a high-level manager in the TSA. And I went and met with them, and had a cup of coffee with them, and they said, you got to warn people. Tuesday, we got called in, the managers, and told that by the middle of September, that the new policy is being written, that this is done. They were told this is happening. This is not hypothetical. You will all have to wear masks again, and so will airport employees. Then, by the middle of October, they are going to say that everyone flying has to wear a mask. And in the meetings, people began to ask them, well, I mean, why is this happening? They said, well, because of the new variant in Canada and because of the WHO, they may, you know, declare this. But regardless, we've been told this is going to happen. And then they were told, we expect by December a return to the full COVID protocol of 2020-2021. And I was given many more details. I wrote down notes on it. Then I left. Called the first federal connection that I was thinking of. Didn't answer. Called the second. Answered. Told them what I've been told, and they said, what day was that? I said, Tuesday. They said, yep, we were told yesterday. Yesterday was Thursday, so it's Wednesday. Expect COVID protocols to begin rolling out middle of September. And I said, what else were you told? Basically that they believe this new variant's super bad and that they're doing the testing and that they should just get ready for a whole new roll out of what happened before, and this was Border Patrol connected people I was talking to, and testing at the border again, and the whole shooting match. That's two federal agents that told me this yesterday. And then I went and looked at the news, and there they were saying Canada's looking at new restrictions again because of the variant, and so is the EU. And what did the Russians just put out 3 days ago? U.S. is plotting another pandemic, Russian head of the defense ministry warns. Now, new lockdowns will starve the third world. New lockdowns will destroy small businesses. New lockdowns will take the average person that's already $5,000 in the hole and their paycheck is just on time. We'll put them into full bankruptcy. And the children in the mask and the attempt to push a new shot for the new variant, and we're right back in the same hellhole we were in just a few years ago. And why is it perfect timing? Because you go into the election year, they had the last crisis go over 2.5 years. They'll bare minimum run this through the next election. It's only 14, 15 months out with mail-in ballots again. And we have all the eyewitnesses and testimony that they'd get the mail-in ballots. And in some cases, they were 99% for Joe Biden. Who believes that? U.S. Postal Service whistleblowers, USPS, poll-watching witnesses. I have it all here. We'll play it next hour. Trying to outlaw questioning an election, indicting the front-runner, total election meddling. Not even the right word. It's stealing an election preemptively. So Trump can't campaign, is unable to campaign, and then you've got right in the middle of all of this a new COVID rollout. And I was very specific with both people. I said, to be clear, did they say this was hypothetical? No, we asked that. We said, how do you know? And they said, well, we can see with the testing, it's going up. It's already really bad. I talked to Dr. Stella Emanuel yesterday about this. I said, are you seeing increases? She said, yeah, it's the COVID shots. We're actually seeing record death, record illness in Houston, where she has a huge practice, medical doctor, compared to the height of the so-called last pandemic. So you have 20 million people dead from the shots. You have all sorts of illnesses. It's all going to be blamed on COVID, the heart attacks, the myocarditis, the blood clots, the strokes, because it's all kicking in now. Some people die in just a few days or a few weeks. Most people die years later. That's what the studies show in mice. The mice, most of them don't die right away. They die in a few months. Well, in mouse life, that's a few years in humans. We've had scientists on, prestigious. You've seen it all. So we're going to have major death this winter when the vitamin D goes down, the viruses that are already in them kick up. You've been implanted with a cocktail, as Dr. Judy Mikovits exposed a few days ago, of hundreds of these viruses. When your body gets overwhelmed, just like herpes keeps coming back over and over again when you're stressed. If a man or a woman has had herpes and then they're in a car wreck, or their mother or father dies, or their kid gets hurt, what comes back? Herpes 10 times worse. When you're under stress, the viruses that are already in you come back. They've implanted you with herpes, SV40 cancer virus, Lyme's disease. That's in the shots. Gloomy. Scientists call for people to start wearing COVID masks again as they sound alarm over new variant AB16 that has lots of new mutations. Print that for me. That's from a few days ago. I hadn't even seen that. See? And that's what they told him. AB16 is the reason this is going to happen, and they know because they can set the PCR test to show it's that when it's really all the other viruses causing it. So are we going to sit here and take this? Are we going to sit here and lay out of this and let them put the narrative out and use the fear-mongering, and then it's the concerts, and then it's the grocery stores, and then it's the fear and all the same thing? Are we going to go through Groundhog Day again? I don't tell you this is coming so when it happens, everybody thinks I'm amazing. I'm telling you this so that we can stop them. Then they'll say, oh, look, Jones said this is going to happen. It didn't happen. I don't mind being the bad guy. I'll dance a little dance if we can stop this. You know they're arrogant, though, and you know they got to steal the next election. So we'll work hard to expose it. It'll get us ahead of it. But I got a sneaking suspicion we'll be sitting here very soon going, Alex Jones was right again.
Coming up, Lex, that's shocking, isn't it? Well, we better be prepared for that and do whatever we can to try to ward that off. Anyway, Roger Stone interviewed by Alex, another interview here, and they're talking about, Trump's chances in trying to get those cases removed out of the state, especially the Georgian, and moving into a federal you know, courtroom. But here we go with Roger and Alex.
Look, Alex, this whole thing is completely out of control. If they could lock the president up for 100 years, believe me, they would do so. But their more immediate goal is to stymie his campaign for president. Completely counterintuitive, with every one of these attacks, the president has gotten stronger and he's raked in more in small and medium-sized campaign contributions. Meanwhile, in the latest national polls, Governor Ron DeSantis has actually slipped behind Chris Christie, both of them in single digits, and with Donald Trump with a 40-point lead. So you're getting increasing hysteria. Their goal is to derail his presidential campaign because an awakened Donald Trump, who now completely understands the game plan of the globalists and those who would move us to the New World Order, is their worst nightmare, and they know it. The president has announced that he will have a public remarks from Bedminster later today. This is a very, very dangerous situation. The judge in the District of Columbia, evocative of my own trial, has made it very clear that if the president defends himself in public pertaining to the indictment in D.C., she's prepared to do anything necessary, including, I think, by implication, incarcerating him. Look, Google is the centerpiece of all evil. Google is deeply involved in the manipulation of the last presidential election. Google's manipulating their search results? This isn't surprising. Try to look up my unconditional presidential pardon. It's buried. In fact, anything positive about me or my family or anything I've ever done is buried. So all they're doing is stepping up the level of censorship. I personally hope that Elon Musk goes out and develops a new search engine that will not take directives from the UN or any other globalist outfit. In all honesty, if you were a donor to my legal defense fund, for example, and you use Gmail, when I try to email you back, whether you whitelisted it or not, it's going to spam, whether I like it or not. Google would classify Hillary Clinton's press releases very differently than Donald Trump's. Therefore, all of Trump's outgoing emails to anybody with a Google address ended up in spam, while Hillary Clinton's
That's what Professor Epstein testified to Congress for, that is election stealing alone.
Absolutely. Google is the epicenter of all evil. We know this. It's not surprising. All they've really done in this announcement is confirm it publicly.
I've not been this excited ever.
The replatforming begins now. Join Mug Club and get 1 month free with promo code Alex at JonesCrowder.com.
Roger Stone is a former political prisoner pardoned by the president for crimes he did not commit. There's really no one out there that's persecuted as much as him except for a few other people, namely the president. So he is uniquely endowed by experience and persecution to be able to speak to this nightmare. But I have to tell you, Roger, I feel a real pain and sadness for our republic. I've never felt that the republic's closer to death. I am saddened right now. I'm grieving.
It's absolutely shocking, Alex. In the 45 years I've been in the public arena, in the 45 years I've been in American politics, I've never seen anything quite like this. Does anyone anywhere think that if Donald Trump was not leading by double digits for the Republican presidential nomination, he wasn't leading the incumbent Joe Biden, who is mired up to his hips in epic scandal in every swing state and in national trial heats, that they would be bringing any of these essentially fabricated charges against him? I have listened to the entire audio tape of the phone call that is the centerpiece of District Attorney Willis's indictment of Donald Trump. I've read the transcript. By the way, it's ponderous. There were six other lawyers on the phone at the time participating. It is absolutely clear that the president does not instruct the Secretary of State to go out and find 11,870 ballots. What he says is you have illegally counted 11,870 votes that are illegal, a certain number of them being convicted felons, a certain number of them being people who are deceased, a certain number of them being people who illegally registered to vote from post office boxes, and so on. So that is a complete bastardization of what he says. And then beyond that, if you read some of these charges, and I'm not an attorney, they're actually counts against him for him going online and urging people to watch OAN or Right Side Broadcasting or in connection with a tweet. This turns our entire system upside down. There is a hysteria about the fact that unimpeded, Donald Trump will return to the White House and he will put America first. And they are, I think, vexed by the fact that no matter what they throw at him, it just seems to make him stronger. The real issue here is the state indictments in New York. And by yesterday, by the way, yesterday, the judge in the New York business records case, which should be a civil case, but has been elevated to a felony because it targets Donald Trump. The judge in that case, despite being a contributor to Joe Biden, declines to recuse himself. No big surprise there. These state charges are actually technically, I think, more problematic because when he returns to the White House, which I believe he will do, he would have the power to pardon himself of these bogus, fabricated federal crimes pertaining to his handling of records or in the matters in D.C., but he has no such ability if he is convicted in any of the states. I would hope that his attorneys would move immediately to remove the Georgia matter to federal court, where he would have a broader jury pool and at least have some chance of having a fair trial.
Coming up next is Alan Dershowitz, and he's saying that this RICO, charges down in Georgia don't hold any water. And he says it's not truly a RICO case to start with. Usually you're using those for organized crime. But here we go with a real short clip from Alan Dershowitz.
Welcome back to the Dersh Show. I get a lot of emails asking me why I'm not defending Donald Trump. Well, the reason is because I have had a policy for the last more than half a century that I defend somebody once. I don't want to become the lawyer for a person. My much stronger preference is to represent somebody for an event, for a crime, for an allegation. So I don't represent, never represented people more than once. I do have to admit that there's a part of me that wishes that I could represent either Donald Trump or some of the co-defendants in this very, very weak and very dangerous RICO case. By the way, for those of you who don't know what RICO means, it's not the name of a person, although some people associate it with the mafia. It's racketeering, influence, and corrupt organization. From the title, it's clear that it was intended to apply to racketeers. Who's a racketeer? We know who the racketeers are. Is this the end of RICO? Edward G. Robinson in that great film. Well, it's not the end of RICO. RICO has gotten a new life. It's now a law in which people, prosecutors, ambitious prosecutors, can go after people who are engaged in political activities. I think often when I read this indictment, my God, it could have applied to those of us in 2000 who tried to undo the election of George W. Bush. We thought it was wrong. We thought that Al Gore had won Florida, that the 576 or whatever number of votes there were very much less than the number of votes that were prevented from being cast for Al Gore. Remember the butterfly ballot, the hanging chads. There was some minority people who weren't allowed to vote because the lines were too long and the polls were closed. There were all kinds of problems with the election, and, Gore's legal team lobbied state legislature. That's now a crime. demanded recounts over and over again. That's now a crime. Did other things of the kind that lawyers commonly do in protesting elections. The first thing you do when you're protesting a presidential election is you prepare a slate of alternative electors. Of course, the Democrats call them fake electors. They didn't call them fake electors when Jamie Raskin, when others on the Democrat side talked about the possibility of alternate electors. Professor Lawrence Tribe wrote legal memoranda that was used by the Gore team. You can't have one rule for the Democrats, one rule for Republicans. Now, I don't approve of what was done by Donald Trump and the people on his side. I don't approve of it. I think he lost the election fair and square. I don't think he should have made that speech on January 6th. Yes, it was constitutionally protected because he said he wanted people to have their voices heard peacefully and patriotically, clearly protected by the First Amendment. That doesn't mean I like it. I don't like a lot of the speeches or a lot of expression that I defend under the First Amendment. I've defended some pretty horrible stuff. I've defended communists, Nazis, pornographers, you name it. I don't have to like these people to defend them or approve of what they've done. And I don't approve of what Donald Trump did, but his speech was protected by the First Amendment. And his call to Secretary of State Raffensperger was clearly protected by the law. What he did is he said, I need to find 7,000 whatever votes. I'm sure that people in the Gore campaign were saying, we need to find 600 votes. Oh, my God, there must be 600 votes out there that haven't been counted. Let's pick this county and that county. Let's ask for selective. And that's what they did in the Gore case, selective counties to be recounted. Not all of them. They wanted only selective counties. And the Supreme Court said, no, we're not going to allow that. And they shut down the recounts and they handed the election over to Al Gore. A mistake, in my view. I wrote a book about it called Supreme Injustice. You can still get it online. It's a real attack on the Supreme Court, especially on my friend Nino Scalia, who cast the deciding vote, refused to grant the stay, granted a stay in this case, rather, granted a stay to stop the counting when he had failed to grant stays, sometimes even in capital cases. So I accused him of a double standard. We made up for it. We became friends, and I was friendly with him till the day he died. But he was wrong, and I didn't commit any crimes. I didn't do anything wrong, and neither did Lawrence Tribe, David Boies, and the rest of the defense team for Al Gore. They did what lawyers do, and I think what's being done here is very similar to what was done. It's different. Every case is different, but there are more similarities than there are differences, and that would be true of other elections, too, the 1960 election, the Tilden Hayes election. Elections going back to Jefferson versus Burr in 1800. You remember that from Hamilton. So
RICO is not even appropriate in this particular situation. So it's way, way off the beam. And we hope that it will not be sustained, this RICO part of it, because it's the RICO, it can be very dangerous. I think it's a 5-year sentence with no parole or pardon whatsoever. But anyway, here we go with Newt Gingrich, a couple of clips coming up with Newt Gingrich and what he has to say overall about what's going on. And he doesn't think too much about some of these latest indictments, this fourth indictment. But there's a fifth one possibly coming up also, and this is what we've got to be careful about in Arizona. But here we go with Newt Gingrich.
So much for joining us. Joining us now, former Speaker of the House, the New York Times bestselling author of the great new book, March to the Majority, The Real Story of the Republican Revolution, Newt Gingrich. Speaker, let's please get your reaction to Arizona Democrat Governor Katie Hobbs saying that Arizona should deliver a possible fifth indictment against former President Trump. What do you think?
Well, I mean, she can say it. She can say all she wants to. The fact is all these indictments are about politics. Not a single one of them is about the law. And I think the public understands that. The last I saw yesterday, Trump is now at 60% support for the nomination. He will probably become the Republican nominee on the 6th of March after the California primary. And all the Democrats are doing right now, particularly with the Biden problems, is they're proving what total hypocrites they are, that this is not about the law. This is about politics. This is a form of warfare against the person most likely to win the presidency. We've never seen anything like it in American history. And I think it's not just at the level of Trump. You have a Democrat attorney general in Michigan who has indicted an 81-year-old woman for agreeing to serve as an elector. I mean, think about how sick that is. So this whole thing, I think, is the greatest constitutional crisis since the Civil War.
That's some serious stuff. Sir, let's listen to Governor Hobbs here. Watch this.
Governor, it's important to see Arizona's Attorney General call a suit in Georgia and Michigan and the state of Oregon put some charges against Donald Trump.
Absolutely. I have been an advocate for holding folks involved in trying to overturn the wealthy voters in the 2020 election accountable, and this is part of that.
Okay, but now her office is putting out a statement, taking that back, claiming she misheard the question. But the point is, Arizona's Attorney General, Chris Mays, is reportedly still investigating Trump. So in your point of view, will voters see through this, that a lot of this is just politics?
Yes.
It's careerism?
No, it's not careerism. It's a vicious partisan war by the left to try to destroy the person who is the greatest threat to their corrupt system. I mean, just take Georgia. Stacey Abrams was the Democratic nominee for governor. She said 30 times that Brian Kemp didn't win. Do you see the district attorney in Fulton County indicting her? Yet she clearly disavowed the result of the election. You can go through case after case. The Al Gore electors in Florida, who are alternate electors, they did exactly what people are being indicted for around the country by the Democrats today. None of them were indicted because people back then had common sense. What you're watching is an act, frankly, of political warfare. It has nothing to do with the law as we've known it. And anybody who attempts to interpret these things as though they involve the law misunderstands the point. Well, one of Trump's indictments is over the 1870 Ku Klux Klan Act in South Carolina. Now, I mean, does anyone seriously believe that Congress in 1870, and by the way, only Republicans voted to abolish the Ku Klux Klan. Every Democrat who voted against the U.S. government stopping the Ku Klux Klan, because back then the Democrats were the party of slavery, segregation, and repression. And you look at that and you say to yourself, you know, Jack Smith is crazy, which he is, by the way. He was rebuked 8-0 by the Supreme Court when he went after Governor Robert McDonald, basically for having lied about the nature of the law. So what we're seeing in D.C., in Miami, in New York, in Fulton County, and maybe certainly with the Attorney General in Michigan, we're seeing a concerted left-wing effort to use the law as a weapon of destruction and to do things that are clearly political and not legal.
You know, the Fulton County DA, Fannie Willis, she's asking for a March 4th trial date for the fourth indictment. That's a day before Super Tuesday, 8 days before Georgia's
sure.
primary, and she launched a campaign fundraising website just days before the fourth indictment. So when you stack this all together, and we're going into the 2024 campaign season, how does this play out with voters? I mean, we're still seeing, you know, the Trump indictments square pretty much in line with any bombshells coming out about the Biden family corruption probe. Let's show that timeline. So how does this play out?
Well, I think, first of all, Republicans have to understand that they're in a political war that is extraordinary and unlike anything we've seen since the Civil War. The Georgia legislature should have a special session and, frankly, disbar her. I mean, she has violated so many rules and is acting so inappropriately, she shouldn't be the district attorney. The U.S. Congress, frankly, ought to cut off the money for Jack Smith and just make it impossible for him to function after September 30th. They should also, in my judgment, they should go ahead now and get the financial records of the Clinton Foundation, which will show far greater corruption than Joe Biden. And I noticed today that Chairman Comer has discovered, in one of those really weird breaks you couldn't write in a novel, that a staff person had written to set up a call to a secret phone on behalf of the vice president then and the president of Ukraine. It happened to come out as a pure accident, and now we know that apparently Joe Biden had a secret phone, which was probably paid for by Hunter Biden's company, and we don't yet know what all the calls were made to it. But that phone, now that we know it exists, when we get the number, AT&T has all those records, and they should be subpoenaed. And we're going to be shocked to find out. But remember, what you have at the national level is Obama corrupting the Justice Department and the intelligence service, Hillary realizing she'll never be tried for anything, so she engages in massive millions of dollars for public policy, and Joe Biden looking at all that going, wow, if you can get away with it, why not? And so he uses his son Hunter as a bagman to go around the world collecting money. This is the most corrupt system in American history, and I don't believe it's going to survive, because I think the American people, the more they learn, the more offended they're going to be.
Speaker Gingrich, come back soon. Love having you on the show. Thank you so much for your insights. Thank you so much.
Newt Gingrich has been one of the most stand-up people about making certain statements on what's going on. And he says it's very dangerous, it's unconstitutional, and he's very, very concerned and worried about this country surviving through this. But coming up next is another Newt Gingrich interview by Kilmeade, and they're talking some very, very wide open angles on this. But here we go with another Newt Gingrich, and he's really an authority in these areas.
20 minutes now after the top of the hour, former President Donald Trump firing back at his latest indictment, claiming he has new proof coming out Monday that will clear his name of all criminal charges in Georgia. As another state, get this, Arizona weighs the prospect of a fifth indictment.
Absolutely. I have been an advocate for holding folks involved in trying to overturn the will of the voters in the 2020 election accountable, and this is part of that process.
Wow. Fox News contributor, former White House Speaker, former House Speaker Newt Gingrich, author of March to the Majority, joins us now. Mr. Speaker, she has since walked that back, and here's the statement. It says Governor Hobbs misheard the question. Wrong. She was responding generally about her belief that anyone who breaks the law must be held accountable for working to overturn a free and fair election. But you heard her. She possibly wants to get in on this. What are your thoughts about the fourth indictment and possibly a fifth if she, in fact, doesn't walk it back?
Well, let's just take her line. So should the Al Gore electors from Florida have all been charged? Should the former chairman of the January 6th committee, who was an alternative elector in Mississippi, be charged? This is all crazy. I mean, let's be clear what's going on. The left is afraid of Donald Trump. He is the one outsider who has shaken their whole system, and they're willing to destroy the law in order to destroy Trump. But that's the heart of it.
But what's the result of it? What's the result?
Look, I believe in the American people. I think in the end this is going to nominate Trump by a landslide, and the nomination may be over by February 1st. I agree with Mark Halperin on that. I think that if the election next year is between those who defend the Constitution and the rule of law and a corrupt family living out the Clinton-Obama-Biden corruption of the American system,
right,
I have a hunch that the American people repudiate the corruption.
Do you really think the president should give this presentation on Monday?
I have no idea. Look, his instincts are so much better than mine. I'm not going to second-guess Donald Trump.
Do you believe that he could win an election while sitting in a courtroom on average 4 weeks at a time sitting for all these trials?
I think the day he walks into a courtroom, 15 million people will volunteer to be surrogates campaigning for Trump. I think people are now so angry at what is such. I mean, the Atlanta situation was an absurdity. That's a district attorney who, if the state of Georgia had any respect, would get her out of office.
Right.
And you watch this whole thing, and I'm told it was all orchestrated from Washington. And after the Weiss nomination as a special counsel blew up, that Friday night somebody called and said, "You got to move Monday."
And then she did Monday night at 10:30. What an embarrassment after a false start. I'm sure you know this, that Greg Stube has filed articles of impeachment against President Biden. That's different from an inquiry. You are for the inquiry, the impeachment inquiry, you're not for the impeachment.
Well, look, I've been through this with Clinton, my first campaign was in 74 during Watergate. I think Speaker McCarthy has it exactly right. We need to move to an inquiry which broadens the range of questions that the Congress can ask. Let's get more facts out on the table. Let's dig deeper into this. We still don't have all the bank reports. We still don't have all the money trails. I mean, there's a lot we need to know. And the country has to come to the conclusion. And this is exactly what's wrong with the Trump attack. The country doesn't believe, there's no unified national belief that Donald Trump should be sued. Well, there's no unified national belief that Biden should be sued. So I think you got to let the facts out, let people think about it, and then if the country comes together, it happens very quickly.
You're an excellent debater. You had your moment because you were strong in the debate stage. What is your advice for the 8 or 9 people on the debate on Wednesday night?
Well, I actually watch Bridesmaids to prepare.
Okay, that's good. That is true, just to relax?
Yeah. I mean, my advice is, you had better already know what you believe, and you better already have practiced it in 100 speeches. So relax and look for 2 or at the most 3 moments when you can say the kind of thing that will get picked up by television and repeated for the next 3 days. The rest of the debate's irrelevant. You just need those 2 or 3 good moments.
I just think there's a possibility of maybe Trump turning himself in before the 25th on the 23rd in the morning, maybe showing up at night at some dramatic entrance. We'll see. I hope it happens. Nuke, thanks so much for coming in, Mr. Speaker.
Glad to be with you.
Great to see you.
By the way, your 2 colleagues look better with their natural hair.
Oh, they do? All right. Sorry, guys. It hurts your feelings. You're not going to be mullet champions like that child.
That's right.
All right. And by the way, Mr. Speaker, don't grow a mullet. I like your hair the way it is.
Good.
And so do the people of Georgia.
Well, that was quite an insight. Andy McCarthy coming up, and he gives some really good insights. And he's saying about this RICO. He says somebody was smoking something when they came up with that RICO charge in Georgia. But anyway, Andy McCarthy is really insightful. And here we go with his views on some of these latest indictments.
Friend, I want to go to Andrew McCarthy, you know him well, former assistant U.S. attorney, Fox News contributor. Andrew, I'm going to ask you a series of maybe simplistic questions, but just allow me to catch up here. One is, if there is a conviction on any one of these other charges, 91 in all now, would that take him out of the presidential running? Would a conviction change that? Or constitutionally, can he keep running regardless?
Constitutionally, Neil, he can keep running. The only qualifications for the presidency in the Constitution are that one has to be over 35, a natural-born citizen, and 14 years resident in the United States. There's no other qualifications. Now, if Congress decided that he couldn't do the job, they could impeach him if they thought there was anything in here or anything else they were aware of that was worthy of impeachment. But he would not be disqualified from seeking office by being indicted or convicted in state court.
You know, using RICO, the Racketeer Influence and Corrupt Organizations Law, that was generally reserved in the past for the most part. I'm not saying because of my Italian heritage I know this, but usually mob figures. So I'm wondering, is this case a bit of a stretch? Forget about the overlap with what, Mr. Smith is doing. I am wondering whether there is the potential of this looking like a reach, much as in Smith's case, going back to some, slavery owning times in making some charges against the former president there as well.
Neil, if it makes you feel any better, in my old life, my office used it against those Irish guys known as the Westies in Manhattan. So I feel your pain. But I really think that it's a mistake for her to have brought a RICO case. I know she says she has experience in these prosecutions. I don't think this is a well-thought-out RICO. And I think in a nutshell, the problem that she has is the main thing that was the objective of the people that she has tried to cast as a racketeering enterprise was to retain Trump in office. So that was like a sort of a temporally fleeting objective. It wasn't a money-generating thing. Like, generally speaking, in the kind of organized crime entities that we're talking about, The reason that you have RICO is because there's an economic purpose to it. They generate money through the commission of a series of crimes, et cetera. Here, the objective here was not to be a member of a group, like it is in a mafia case where, you know, the objective is to be a member of the mafia family and to generate income through its activities. Here, the objective was a lawful one, which they may have used unlawful means occasionally to try to get over the finish line, which was to retain Trump in power. But that's not the kind of glue that would keep a racketeering organization together. Hmm. So I just think that she's groping for a crime. What she really needs is a simple conspiracy that has a simple objective. A conspiracy is simply an agreement by two or more people to violate another law, you know, some criminal law. And if retaining Trump in office was a crime, then she'd have an easy, simple, straight-line conspiracy. She really doesn't have that because the objective is not illegal, even if some of the means they use to try to obtain the objective may have been.
So she wants a speedy trial. You know, everyone on the prosecution side wants a speedy trial for their various cases. The former president obviously wants to push this back. And how is that kind of stuff resolved, Andy?
Well, I've been in a case with 22 defendants where we had 19 who went to verdict. That remains the longest federal criminal trial in American history, I believe, the 17-month Pizza Connection case back in the 80s. Hmm. And I think we took 2 years to get to trial.
Wow.
And I then did a terrorism case in the 90s, the Blind Shea case, where we started with 12 defendants, and that took nearly 2 years to get to trial as well. Here, she's not only indicted 19 people, Neil, she's indicted a bunch of people who were lawyers. And these lawyers are going to get more lawyers, and they're going to file like the Manhattan, if people still remember what the Manhattan phone book looked like back in ancient times. But the motions in this right. case are going to be very, very extensive. I can't see this case getting to trial, but I would just caution people that, you know, part of the state system is that your prosecutors are elected, not appointed. So it's an inherently political system. I think a lot of what Fannie Willis may have wanted to achieve here, she achieved by filing the indictment.
All right. You're talking about the Fulton County DA, Fannie Willis. One quick last question for you.
Right.
We're told that what makes this Georgia case more problematic, Andy, is that the president can't pardon himself out of it, that there would have to be even a requirement that if he were convicted on anything and he had to spend 5 years in prison before he could be pardoned at all, and not by the governor, but by a state board of paroles and pardons. So that could weigh on the former president. This could be the most delicate of all, right?
Yeah, we've never had a situation, and this goes to your first question, which is a great question. It's just like decided by the Constitution that, you know, there's no disqualification involved here. But I think the point you're making is that as a practical matter, the idea that you would have somebody who was seeking the presidency or even elected to the presidency, who's looking at, say, I don't think much of a RICO charge, but say he were convicted of it and was looking at a mandatory minimum 5 years in Georgia State Prison, that would put us in a place we've never been before. And I have a feeling that if somebody tells you they know how that's going to come out, then, you know, they're either under an illusion or they're smoking something.
I'm just encouraged that the Irish were also brought under RICO statutes as well. So thank you for keeping that fair and balanced. Andrew, great seeing you again. I appreciate it.
This Maui catastrophe in Hawaii has many facets to it. There have been people out there that have been testifying that there were water rights being fought over long before, over the last few years. In another report by Tulsi Gabbard, it's not in this particular report, but she said on another interview that they were waiting for the state approval to use water to put out the fires. Now, what's that about? That's crazy. But anyway, here's an excellent interview with Laura Ingraham and Tulsi Gabbard, and they're talking about how devastated the people were, and they had to smuggle, private enterprise had to smuggle things into them. They were trying to blockade some of the aid going in initially. Boy, this is just shameful. But here we go with Laura Ingraham and Tulsi Gabbard.
And speaking of which, Joe Biden finally announced he was going to visit fire-ravaged Maui after ignoring reporters' questions on it just days ago while on vacation in Delaware. Now, I want to quickly remind you all about something. Senator Ted Cruz flew to Cancun during a winter storm that left much of his state without power or water. He quickly realized that that was a mistake, and he came back. But it was a days-long news cycle, and he's still hearing about it. And Biden's dismissal of an unfolding tragedy in Hawaii, barely a blip for, of course, the Trump-obsessed media. Now, here's what they're missing. There are now reports that the death toll will not just rise in Maui, but will tragically include scores of children who were kept home because power outages forced schools to close. Joining us now, Tulsi Gabbard, former Hawaii congresswoman and a Fox News contributor. Tulsi, you just got back from Maui. Please tell us what you saw there. This is so heartbreaking for all Americans to see.
Yeah, Laura, it's difficult to put into words this tragic loss that continues to grow, that we're continuing to see and experience and feel every time there are more and more names and numbers of our friends and neighbors in Lahaina who have perished because of this wildfire. Now, there's still over 1,000 people who are missing. There's still the vast majority of that area of devastation that needs to be gone through by those who are that are conducting this recovery operation. But I also want to speak to the many, many families who live in the communities surrounding Lahaina, just north of that historic town, who are continuing to struggle. Many of them did not have power for days. They were told the water was contaminated, having to shower and bathe their children with bottled water, cut off from communication. The cell phone towers were down. They had no Wi-Fi or internet connectivity. These are people who stood up in the midst of this tragedy and did everything they could to help each other. The sad part is we are 8 days past this wildfire, and I'm in constant touch with these community members and leaders. They are still not seeing response from the county, the state, the federal government to be able to go out and help them. The community support hubs that they have are 100% community-led, volunteer supply collections, conducting all of these coordinations on their own. They feel like the government doesn't care about them, and that's a horrible, horrible disservice to people who have gone through a kind of loss that we can't even imagine.
No, I mean, we have a lot of commitments around the globe, and we're not getting into politics here, but you know, we do spend billions and billions of dollars and allocate it to, you know, other countries' issues and problems. And this is when we realize you have to, you know, put your own oxygen mask on first before you can really help others. And these people need help. They need help now, not a week from now.
That's exactly right. When you think about, you know, there's a mom, a woman named Andrea. She's a mom, a stay-at-home mom raising her kids. She has stepped up and spent every day and night trying to be a coordinator to get the supplies that volunteers are trying to bring in, and oftentimes having to circumvent blockades put in place by the county just to get those supplies to them, to get them to where they need. Not only are they not getting the support that they need, but oftentimes they have been getting blocked from being able to receive the support from their friends and neighbors. This is a crisis that is continuing on. It is not at all lost on the people of West Maui when they're told that FEMA is going to give those impacted a one-time $700 payment. And as they look at the news, they are seeing tens of more millions of dollars being sent to Ukraine. Billions. Some of them said, hey, maybe if we just change the name of Maui to Ukraine, maybe then they'll pay attention to us.
Yeah, Tulsi, and I know all the breaking news tonight about the background of the chief emergency response coordinator didn't have a lot of experience in these types of situations. The sirens apparently weren't working as they should have for this type of event, fire event, and all of this we'll get to the bottom of. But Tulsi, thank you. Thank you for your report.
Now some more information about Maya. Quick report.
From Fox, where we continue to bring you top stories, headlines, all in the mix right here on Live Now. I am your host, Mike Pace, as we continue to give you updates as well. The devastation in Maui continues there as search and rescue efforts continue right now. But I want to bring in a very special guest here on Live Now from Fox. This is Tulsi Gabbard, the former Hawaii congresswoman representing the 2nd District there. And we We appreciate you joining us here on Live Now from Fox. And I have to ask, just what was your first reaction when you saw the devastation?
I mean, to say that it is heartbreaking is an understatement. The amount of loss and devastation and destruction is really difficult to comprehend or to justify in putting into words. You know, I spent yesterday with a lot of families, many of whom for generations have lived in this community, Native Hawaiian families who, you know, for as long as they can remember, this has been their home. It's been their town. It's been their community. It's known as a famous tourist destination, but this place, Lahaina, is very much a center of Hawaii's history. So to see within a matter of hours how this town has been just turned into total ash without any real concept of exactly how many people perished in this wildfire, that's exactly the situation people here on Maui are facing. Right alongside that, there are a number of surrounding communities around Lahaina who have been and are continuing to struggle and suffer in the aftermath of this disaster. Many of them have been cut off and remain cut off with communications. You know, the cell phone tower signals are weak or not working at all. They don't have access to internet. There are a few Starlink boxes here and there. You can go and park yourself somewhere on a corner for a little bit to try to log on and connect with your family and friends. But, you know, some of the things that these communities are asking for are very simple. The means to communicate, VHF radios. They need to be able to talk to the county, the state, the federal officials who are supposed to be here providing support for them. The beautiful story in all of this, as we've seen in other disasters, what makes this community so special is how even those who have lost everything are working tirelessly to help their neighbor, to help their friend, to help take care of each other, both to make sure their communities remain safe and secure from looters, but also to make sure that those basic needs are met, whether it's food, water, medicine, making sure that the elderly and the children are taken care of. So the community is stepping up. They are coming together like never before. We need to make sure that the right thing is done and providing them the support they need now, both from government officials and the many who have generously made contributions to support this community, but also to make sure that they are respected and honored as this rebuilding process conversation begins.
Yeah, Tulsi, you make such great points there, and really just showing the human dignity in it all when you see there the people that have really lost everything, but were able to survive and then are able to volunteer there and do what they can there to help their neighbors out. And it must be a difficult time for them, obviously losing maybe loved ones, losing property, but going forward here, not knowing what the future of the land will be.
That's a very serious issue. You know, this is, we are an island state. We are the most remote island chain in the world. And this community, which includes a lot of Native Hawaiians, have lived here for generations. It is a very real and present fear that developers will come in, that the state will take total control of the land, that they will lose their ancestral homes, and that the historic and sacred nature of this place will be consumed by those who have outside interests and don't have the well-being of the people of this community and their culture and their history at heart. So it's, you know, I met yesterday with a highly respected Native Hawaiian leader, Archie Kalepa. He is a world famous surfer. He is a mentor in this community and leading the charge in the immediate disaster response. But he was moved to tears as he expressed his own fears that people would be forced to leave Hawaii and go and find someplace else to live, because they cannot go back and rebuild their homes. His comment was, what is Hawaii without Hawaiians? And so he is doing all that he can now, even as they're trying to go from one day to the next, to start these conversations to make sure that the spirit and the heart of Lahaina, of Maui, and of Hawaii remains as we look to what that rebuilding process is.
Yeah. So true there. And going forward here, these next 72 hours are going to be very, very critical here. What are you hoping for as far as more supplies and aid coming to this area that has been so desperately in need? What is it going to look like here in these next couple of days when a lot of focus needs to continue to be on Maui?
Well, you know, communication is everything all the time, but especially in a time of disaster. And unfortunately, that communication is not robust at this point. There are a lot of communities, as I mentioned, who still don't have the means to communicate from one town to the next, what to speak of to government officials and those who should be dialed in on what kind of support these communities need right now. So communication, that's as simple as getting VHF radios out to these different communities. That's something that I'm working on right now. That will enable a more organized deployment of needed resources to those who need it the most. The next step here is making sure that the state and federal leadership, who have just stood up a joint task force as of last night, are getting that direct communication, again, to be able to deploy the resources that we already have here in this state to those who need it the most. Those are the two critical things here that need to be focused on, even as the recovery of remains and identification of those who have perished in this fire in that front street, in that Lahaina town proper, continues.
Yeah, when we see these images that continue to be played out there, it's something that we have really just never seen associated with a wildfire. And to think that it has happened to such a beautiful area and with so much history, I mean, it's heartbreaking.
It is. And you know, I am moved to tears on almost a daily basis. Seeing those images. I represented this community for 8 years as a member of Congress, have walked those streets countless times, have so many close friends and those who I've worked with in the community, to see this loss that really occurred with no notice, and the after action review needs to take place when this is all said and done to determine, how to better create a resilient community and prevent this kind of disaster again. But, you know, it doesn't take away from the fact that those who were in that area, those who lost their lives, they didn't have any time. They didn't have any time to get themselves to a safe place. And those who did often did so with whatever they had on their hand. There's a lot of people who are here who got away with just their phone. They don't have any wallets. They don't have any identification. They don't have anything else. But what they had on their person and could literally run away with or swim away with. You know, I think there's so many lessons to be learned here, but at a personal and deeply spiritual level, it's a reminder of how short life is, how temporary life is, and how important it is for us to make the most of every single moment and day that we have to be of service, to make a positive impact on others around us and to live that purposeful life of serving a purpose higher than our own.
That is so, so true, and I'm so glad that you said that. Tulsi, thank you so much for coming on here on Live Now from Fox and really giving us some insight about what is going on now and what needs to be done coming up for the future. We really, really appreciate it here on Live Now.
Thank you.
Take care. And we will continue to follow always the latest coming out of the devastation there and wait for more updates. And when that happens, we will bring it to you right here on Live Now from Fox. But I do want to slide away for another 2 minute break. Stay right here with us. Always more to come on Live Now from Fox.
Good night. God bless everybody.